Hello, everybody. This is Dr. Diana Wiley. I'm your host of Love, Lust, and Laughter. And I've got lots of enthusiasm, lots of excitement. For one thing, we're back live after PRN's difficulties. And so glad to be back with all of you live. And so glad to have Carl Frankel back as a guest. Welcome, Carl.
Hi, Diana. Lovely to be here.
Yes, and I know you got bumped a couple of times when PRN was having technical difficulties, and so. Carl is a writer, entrepreneur, and the managing director of Sherry Winston's Center for the Intimate Arts. And Carl and I discussed last December and January one of his books, Love and the More Perfect Union. And today, tonight, we're going to discuss his other book, Secrets of the Sex Masters. And it is such an amazing book. We're going to look at sex and energy, but maybe start out with positivity.
Okay.
Positivity in a relationship. And Carl told me off the air that he's really been focusing in on this lately, and I like that kind of focus because it seems to make a big difference in life when we're positive.
Absolutely. You know, there's this whole movement called the sex positive movement, Diana, and it's a great movement. It's about getting rid of the shame and stigma that's associated with sex and celebrating it for the gift that it is. So I'm all for it, and there's a big asterisk, because really what people kind of miss the forest for the trees a bit here. Sex is so compelling, people tend to focus on that. But the deeper or the higher level issue is really around pleasure. Sex is a very intense form of pleasure.
Yes.
So the deeper question is, what are our attitudes towards pleasure? What are our attitudes towards all the blessings and gifts that life gives us just by virtue of our being incarnated into existence? And positivity to me is really about saying yes to the opportunities that exist everywhere and in everything. And if one can make a habit or a practice of being affirming and positive about the life we confront, we can sort of generate a real joy in life that will manifest in a lot of ways, including a better relationship. If you're not being pissy with your partner, I'll bet you have a better relationship. And if you're not being pissy with your partner, you'll probably have better sex too. You'll probably want to have sex.
Want to have sex.
If you're still busy being pissy with each other.
I know. I can't tell you the number of couples that I see in my practice who are, as you put it, pissy with each other. And so sometimes we have to do, or I have to do, psychotherapy before I can get into sex therapy, because they're angry with each other and they don't want to have sex. So it's really important. You talk about attitudes of playfulness and pleasure and peaking, and I would like to get into this in more detail with you. Before that, though, I'd like to, Secrets of the Sex Masters, which you co-wrote and edited, and this chapter that we're going to focus on, Energy Sex, Reed Mihalko.
Here you go.
And,
right.
Yes, I think I said it right. And I'm hoping to have him as a guest, too. You put me in touch with him. You know, the great thing about my job, not only as a psychotherapist and a sex therapist, but as a radio host, is that networking is fabulous, and I get to meet so many people that are just wonderful, just wonderful. And so I like what Reed and maybe you both wrote together in this chapter, and this will be a segue also to an intro and a segue later when we talk about energy and sex. So you write, the two of you, when you make sex more interesting, you make life more interesting.
Absolutely. Well, you know, it's these sort of, we're programmed to not be overwhelmed. So we tend to limit our perceptions, limit our experience. We can only process so much information. We can only process really so much joy and ecstasy. So we tend to sort of narrow it down. Reed, who is a wonderful teacher and a real master at this thing called energy sex, talks about, and he doesn't knock normal sex. We all know normal sex is great, but he says it's like one of those going to a restaurant where it has the piece of paper on the table and having four crayons. It's just, you know, you're limited in the range of what you can do. And the real palette of sex covers the full box of 64 crayons, he says. There's just all kinds of potential out there, which honestly most people don't really get to. I actually am reading a fun novel by an Irish writer, and he's really witty and entertaining. I think he's great. But his definition of being a good lover is, well, I can go for 12 minutes and I can go all night long, but it's really not about duration or stamina. It's about connection and what's happening in the time you're together. So we're kind of confused culturally about sex and ecstasy and our potential for ecstatic happiness.
Yes, and so you also say, you and Reed, energy sex is magical in the sense that it's not easily explained by the rational mind. It's literally a wonderful experience, as in full of wonder. The world becomes wondrous and fresh, as it was when we were children. See, that I'm always saying to my clients, I'm often saying to my clients,
yeah,
sex is play. And
yeah,
so many people just don't understand that.
It's like, it's yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
I mean,
it's like sex is work. I've got premature ejaculation. I've got ED. I've got no orgasms. You know, it's work. And so part of my work as a sex therapist is to help them get beyond that sex is play. And I think the writings you do are really important to helping people get to this place where sex can be more playful.
Well, I think there are a lot of reasons for this. One is that we live in a culture where we're graded on how good we are. We do it internally, if not externally. So there's a lot of performance pressure on people, and the more performance pressure there is, the less likely we are to play. And also, sex is really intimate, and all our stuff can show up in the bedroom. And if we're warding off shame or dealing with shame, that's another reason it's really hard to play. At the same time, you know, kids play. That's what they do. It's the best way to learn is play. And what do you adults, what's the really fun way for adults to play? Well, it's in bed. It's a wonderful opportunity to be creative, to be improvisational, to be exploratory, to be in discovery. All these things are, you know, the bedroom is a kind of an adult playground. I'm always entertained by the fact that swingers invite each other to play parties, and what they're saying is
play
have sex. But it's really, I think it's that expression exists because what's happening is they're kind of trying to defang the threatening nature of swinging by saying we're just kids having fun in a particularly and peculiarly adult context.
Yeah, I will just add to what you just said is that sex toys are adult
yeah.
toys, the best adult toys.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Yeah.
And sort of, you know, amidst all this shame and, you know,
mm-hmm.
kind of eekiness about the whole business, the flip side of it is I can go onto Amazon now and buy great sex toys. So
oh,
culture,
I know. It's just
right?
amazing.
Yeah.
You can get everything on Amazon now. And I have a lot of clients that found their favorite sex toys on Amazon. So
it's kind of wild.
Love for Amazon.
It's really changing. I think partly it's due to the proliferation of porn. I mean, what is it? Somebody said 20% of searches on the Internet are porn-related. I mean, porn...
20%, wow.
Porn rules, right? So it's really transforming our culture. Now, I think porn is a mixed bag, honestly, but it's got some good qualities, and it's really driving a transformation for better and for worse in our attitudes culturally towards sex, I think.
But, of course, porn is a really, typically it's a bad sex educator.
Oh, and it's the worst.
The worst. And one of the great things about your book, Secrets of the Sex Masters, is that you have many approaches to sexuality, co-written, and then edited. So man, it's just a really rich book, and I encourage our listeners to get that book. And what's the best way for them to do that, Carl, to get the book?
Well, first of all, thank you. I really appreciate, Diana. I'm really proud of the book. And before I give the sort of how to buy it thing,
yeah.
You were talking about networking before. So I am the life and business partner of a very skilled sex teacher named Sherry Winston. And because I'm her life partner, I've been introduced to the world of sex educators, people who teach grown-ups how to have great sex. And so what I did with this book as an entrepreneur and professional writer is I went out to people who were the sort of the cream of the crop, in my opinion, and said, hey, you want to contribute? And most of them said, sure, great.
Right.
So what I
right.
have is 19 contributors in, I think, 16 or 17 chapters on everything from genital anatomy to sex and shame to energy sex. And it was really fun collaborating with these people who are really, really interesting people. Everyone from my partner Sherry to Charles Muir, who is generally credited with bringing Tantra, one of the two people who brought Tantra to the West, to the very famous porn actress Nina Hartley and her husband Ernest Green, who contributed a section on Kinky Play. And they were just fabulous. So it's just a fascinating cross-section of people, and I had the time of my life doing it. So
it's a great read. It's an informational read. And I nominated your book for the ASECT Award, Book Award. ASECT, is, listeners, is the American Association for Sex Educators, Counselors, and Teachers. I'm such a believer in this book. I love this book. And so how can people get it now?
Okay, well, I'll keep going thank you for the rest of the
week. Yeah, all right, that's all right.
I really appreciate it. Amazon is a great place to get it,
right,
or you can go to our website, which is intimateartscenter.com.
Mm-hmm.
So either one will work, and I think it's a really interesting read, and it really gives some visions about sex that most people don't have. I've always thought about sex as a way to have amazing pleasure, and it certainly is all that. But as I talk to these people who are specialists in sex, and I think who are probably pretty uniformly all really skilled in bed, the message I got was it's really about connecting with another person. It's before anything else. It's about being close to another person and getting intimate in that very special way and getting naked, not only in your body, but in your soul and your spirit and your heart. So it was really a fascinating exercise, and I'm not trying to get – and it's also about having amazing ecstasy and orgasms and such. So it was really fun.
Yes.
I recommend it.
I recommend it, too, and I'm so glad you are back to talk about your book and to talk on the air with me about this. So let's we'll come back to some of the particulars of energy sex. But let's talk a little bit about positivity. And you told me something off the air that I was fascinated about, and that is Pollyanna. And I went and looked her up in Wikipedia, as you had done. So this is a novel that was written in 1913. And, of course, well, you talk about it. Chime in, but you talk about it.
Well, there's this whole, I want to frame it in this conversation about the famous song, Walk on the Sunny Side of the Street. And people go, yeah, great. And a lot of people roll their eyes and go, yeah, right, there's pain, there's suffering, there's illness, there's disease, there's death. Who are you kidding, right?
Mm-hmm.
And I get that, too. So there's this tension. Are we just kidding ourselves, or is there any practical value in being optimistic and positive? Well, what's happened in the last 10 or 20 years is a science of happiness is developing, where they're doing neurocognitive kinds of research, and they're finding out things like 40% of our happiness is within our control. Some of it is embodied, or we're depressive by nature, but we can have a pretty significant effect on how happy we are, and we have to be positive. Now,
yes.
100 years ago, 102 years ago, this woman named Eleanor Norton wrote a children's novel called Pollyanna, and you've probably heard, you know, you're such a Pollyanna, which has come down to mean you're totally pie in the sky, you're totally ungrounded, and you're just spinning cotton candy confections and not dealing with life as it is. You're kind of full of it, actually. That's what a Pollyanna is. People don't take Pollyannas seriously. However, in the 1913 story, this was a girl who had this bubbling, ebullient nature who learned to do something she called the glad game. She had this, you know, sort of nasty stepmother. There are always nasty stepmothers in stories.
Right? Including Cinderella. Lots of nasty stepmothers.
Right? So she decided she was going to play something called the glad game. And anything that happened to her, she was going to find something to be glad about it. And the way the story unfolds, the Pollyanna story unfolds, is not only did her stepmother stop being a sourpuss, but her goodwill was so contagious that this whole dour, puritanical New England town became transformed and happy by virtue of Pollyanna's
influence. Oh, yeah.
It's, like it's a sweet story. And now what's really interesting is that people have come and become totally snobbish about Pollyanna's. The real irony here is that the signs of happiness suggest that Pollyanna herself wasn't really a Pollyanna the way we've come to understand it. She was a practical, pragmatic person who was actually making really wise life decisions that influenced not only her happiness, but those of her community. Because that's the important thing about positivity. It will make you happy. I'm not recommending that you just play ostrich, but you deal with unhappiness in a straightforward way, but that if you really cultivate the habit of finding the positive in what's going on in your life and around you, not only will you be happier, but the people around you will be happier too. And I can take this back and relate it to Reed Mahalko's chapter on energy sex, actually.
Yes.
In his chapter, he says, if somebody walks into the room and they're really angry, you know it right away. You pick up that energy, and it can put a pall over a whole room if somebody with this, like, real rage comes in, right? You can feel it. Energy, emotional energy transmits. Heart energy transmits. The energy field of the heart, I believe, transmits up to 30 feet away, actually. So when you're being positive, you are actually transforming the world around you. So this takes me into a little bit of a John Lennon trip. Just imagine a world where people were being positive with each other.
Yeah.
It would be a really, really different place. So my partner Sherry and I, and we're a couple, and couples have challenges. It's sort of the nature of relationship. But a couple of years ago, we embarked on a campaign of positivity with each other.
Mm-hmm.
We basically, before I ever knew about Pollyanna, decided to play variations of the glad game with each other every day. We would try something different, but we would resolve to be conscious and present and positive with each other to the extent we could be. It has been an amazingly transformative experience for us. So it's, you know, to me it's kind of like a magic prescription, and I'm not a sex therapist, and I understand people are different and complicated and neurotic and attached to their unhappiness. There's all kinds of stuff deep in the psyche. But I genuinely believe that if people have the capacity to embrace positivity and stick with it, it really is a life changer.
I believe that too. And I got really lucky in life because I came out of a family where there was secure attachment and my parents loved each other and were affectionate with us and all of that. And my mother describes me as a little girl as always dancing around the house and being laughing and being happy. And I can remember I got positive strokes for that, and I decided, boy, it sure works better if you're happy and positive in life. And when I'm coming up on a big Scripps reunion, and my Scripps College asked for, when I was a senior, for a quote, and I quoted William Blake, enthusiasm is love. And I've always been an enthusiastic person. Oh, no, enthusiasm is beauty. I got a little confused, but it's also love. Enthusiasm is beauty and love, yes? And so it just works better. And I do think that when people are positive and enthusiastic, and they need, sometimes they need therapy to work this through. Now, I know you and Sherry do morning games that you have entitled Peaking, which helps you keep your relationship strong and positive. You want to talk about that a little bit?
Sure, I will. I also would note that the etymology of the word enthusiasm comes from infused with the energy of the gods, right?
Oh, I so love
like,
that.
Right? So it's like, so
infused,
yes, you're enthusiastic.
With the energy of the gods. So now when Brian, my fiancé, calls me a goddess, we
there
have another layer for this.
You're an enthusiastic goddess, even better.
That's
okay.
Great to know that. Yes, all right.
Yeah. So where were we? Oh, we're talking about peaking.
Peaking.
There's also, by the way, a great quote. I'm working on a book on positivity in relationships, and it's going to be published in a couple months. It's called Getting to Yes, Yes, Yes.
Oh, and wonderful.
It's got some nice quotes. I think it was Abraham Lincoln, I think. I'm going from memory here, who said something like, and I'm just paraphrasing, you can mourn the fact that the rose bush has thorns, or you can celebrate the fact that the rose bush has roses, right? And it's sort of,
yes,
that's the principle, right?
Right, I like that.
Pleasure and games and peaking. So what Sherry and I do is positivity games.
Mm-hmm.
And I'll talk about peaking in a moment. So what we do, and we try to keep it fresh and do different things, but what we tend to do as much as anything is play a game that we call, and it's a mouthful, micro moments of positivity resonance. And what that means, because it is a mouthful, micro moments, you create, this is based on a book by Barbara Fredrickson called, I think, Love 2.0. She says Love 2.0 or Happiness 2.0, but what she says is, that love isn't a state. It's not that I love Sherry or Sherry loves me, although that's the case. It's that you create love. Love is something dynamic that you create moment to moment in every moment of your life, or not.
Mm-hmm.
So the phrase micro moments means this is a moment where I can either be a love generator or not.
Mm-hmm.
Positivity resonance means we co-create it. If I'm positive and Sherry's back, we start resonating. And again, we're back to energy, because that's what happens when people are having energy sex. They start resonating energetically, and it can build and build and build, and all of a sudden their heads blow off and they're having energy orgasms, right? It's the same principle around positivity and happiness. So what we try to do is generate as many micro moments of positivity resonance as we can.
Yeah. I love that. And you have in your chapter with Reed, resonance play, the best way to learn to play with sexual energy.
It's really fun finding out the times, because, as you know, we said, let's talk about positivity and let's talk about energy sex. And I wasn't really seeing the connections between the two when we said that, and they're all over the place, right?
But all over the place.
It's kind of fun. And it's about energy. That's the really important lesson here.
Mm-hmm.
Because in our culture, we think that sex is physical. It's about body parts and friction and stuff.
Mm-hmm.
But energy precedes anatomy. It's a really important point. So it's the energy of the heart, the energy of the emotions, the energy of play, the energy of erotic energy, because it is erotic energy. You know how we're turned on by somebody else? That's energy. It ain't the body. It's energy before it's anything else. So, right?
Yes, absolutely. You know, there is a wonderful, he's very skilled, a urologist out of New York City, and his name is Stephen Lamb, and he's a practicing internist faculty member at New York University School of Medicine, and so on. And he says, visualize for sex success. And I like what he says, but he doesn't include the emotional part of it that you're talking about. He says sex is a physical act. And just as athletes practice visualization techniques so they can perform optimally, you can use the same techniques to build confidence in your bedroom performance. Now, he's addressing erectile dysfunction and premature ejaculation. And he gives some good advice. First, relax, lie on your back on a mat or a rug with your arms at your sides and take a deep breath. So he talks about breathing and then picturing yourself about to have sex. And go through it just like an athlete would, right? To get in the zone, step by step. And imagine every aspect of the session, including the sights, sounds, and smells associated with sex. It's about mental practice. When the time comes for the actual moment, your confidence will be higher. A lot of that is good, but he does not mention the emotional part that you're talking about.
I think
the heart's part.
I'm talking about emotions. I'm also talking about energy, right?
Right.
I think he's giving great advice, so I'm not knocking what he's saying.
Nor am I.
But there's a component to sex, which is, as you were saying before, kind of magical because it doesn't really equate. The rational mind has trouble processing it.
Mm-hmm.
I've had experiences with Sherry, and I don't claim to be an amazing energy master, but I've had my moments where literally we would just be lying together for 3 hours at a time and our bodies would be just vibrating energetically.
Yes.
In a real sense, orgasmically, just by the kind of energetic connection and resonance we'd built up. This stuff is real. I know I wasn't making that up.
No, you weren't. And to quote William Wordsworth, love betters what is best.
Mm-hmm.
So you have the love, you have the skills. I can identify with all of this because I have it with Brian, too. Love betters what is best.
Yep. Absolutely.
And so when you have the connection, the energy connection and the skills and the motivation, right? Because a lot of about passion is motivation.
Yep. And you have to renew that.
Mm-hmm.
Passion over time. It's really easy when the person is new and there's ego and conquest and freshness, but when you've been seeing the person for 5 or 10 or however many years, then it becomes a kind of a different energetic system and within which you're operating, right? There's this phrase called new relationship energy, and it's a real thing. It's like, the grass is always greener on the other side, or in the context of sex, you might say the ass is always greener on the other side.
Of course.
But not everybody says that.
And Helen Fisher's work using functional MRIs actually confirmed this in looking at brains and what happens in brains and new relationships with lots of testosterone and dopamine, the hormone of arousal, which needs novelty. And then as time goes along in the relationship, what happens in the brain changes, so there's more oxytocin, the cuddle chemical, and vasopressin, the chemical or the hormone that helps with bonding, with commitment.
Right. And that's a fine thing, but it tends to not have the same kind of erotic energy that those floodings have. Absolutely. Mm-hmm. So, this is part of life. In fact, the Secrets of the Sex Masters has a chapter on keeping the flame alive, on what's called dead bedroom syndrome. This is such a common phenomenon, actually, it's one of the most unhappy marriages. It's one of the most Googled things there is out there. There's a term for it, dead bedroom syndrome. Reddit, which is a social media site, very, very huge, has 20,000 members in its dead bedroom syndrome subreddit, it's called. So this is a phenomenon that many, if not most, couples have to deal with as they get deeper into a relationship.
And it's the majority of my private practice, really.
Yeah, I would think.
Anyway,
let me
yes, go
let
ahead.
Me come back because we got sort of we digressed away from the peaking thing that you were talking about.
I know, and I did want you to talk more about that because it's something that you and Sherry practice,
right.
It could be very valuable for listeners, possibly some of our listeners.
And I have a couple minutes before you break, I take it.
No, I was told by our producer that we're not having a break.
Oh, no break.
We
okay,
just get to keep talking until a couple of minutes before the top of the hour.
Let's just keep on trucking then. Okay, so
why not?
So as I'm a writer and I try to figure stuff out and then I write it down so I can share it with people.
Mm-hmm.
So when I was trying to figure out what this book would look like and I thought about what are the components of positivity? And so that's sort of, if that's the generic big bucket, we dump all this stuff of positivity. And so I came up immediately with three things. Positivity with a small p, like a positive attitude, sort of
mm-hmm.
playing the glad game, if you will. Another was play, being like a child, having fun, just playing.
Mm-hmm.
Pleasure. There's a wonderful Khalil Gibran quote about, remember that the wind wants to play with your hair and the soil wants to play with your toes, something like that, right? It's just
yeah.
a beautiful poetic quote. And that was with me, and I was thinking, yeah, but something's missing, and especially in the context of relationships. And what I came out with was this, and I can speak this to my early experience pretty much every time I've fallen in love.
Mm.
And that is, you know, in those early magical encounters, I look at my partner and I don't see only a person of flesh and blood and with the unusual mix of strengths and weaknesses and neuroses and what have you and baggage. I see somebody, I see a light shining through their eyes that I can only call divine. And it's like,
mm.
I'm seeing the Godhead. I'm seeing something eternal and archetypal and beautiful beyond belief. And that,
mm.
ultimately, the other stuff I kind of like or love or feel tender about, but it's that the Godhead that I just go completely bonkers about. I just, holy mackerel, I've just been blessed to see this because it's so confirming about the beauty of life in all of us, ultimately. It's just this magnificent experience. And then what happens is the passion fades, or you have kids, or you got to pay bills, or you see your partner on the John one time too many. And all of a sudden, that sense of your partner as divine starts getting swallowed up in the kind of routine of day-to-day obligations and activities.
Mm-hmm.
All of a sudden, you're back in the land of the mundane and the secular when you started off with this real high that's a spiritual high, really, about connection with a sense of the Godhead, what's eternal and beautiful.
Yes.
To me, the missing link in the whole positivity conversation, at least in my positivity conversation, was what can I do with my partner to remind us that we're not only mortal beings trying to muddle through this thing called life, we also incarnate a divine spark that is within us all the time. You know, the expression, you know, the word, the, I guess it's Sanskrit, the namaste means the God in me salutes the God or goddess in you. And so how can we recall that namaste reality? So again, it's a matter of playing games. And I call this peeking because I like peas and we have pleasure, play, and positivity. So I wanted another word with a P. So it's
right,
called
right.
peeking. So it's called peeking. It's easy. The four P's. So, and peeking is about exercises that will remind us that we're with somebody who's magnificent. And you know, it can be as simple as just being eye gazing and visualizing your partner as a divine incarnation. Right? There are many ways you can do this. You can put your hand on each other's heart and just feel the heart energy, and you can just focus on heart energy, or you can focus on heart energy while you're visualizing their God self, their God manifestation. You can imagine the partner as a divine being and practice circulating energy with your partner while you're doing that. Just, you know, visualizing energy moving from their crown chakra, the top of their skull, down their spine, through their pelvis, into your pelvis, and up around. You can make a loop like that. There are as many ways to play as there are people with imaginations. But that's the gist of it. Try to
get out of
the mud of day-to-day's routine.
Yeah, I think that those exercises, and some of them are actually rooted in some research, the eye-gazing, for instance. They can be very powerful to increase intimacy.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Yeah.
And it's, you know, I've been to retreats where one of the things you, and it, you know, there are 40 people and you don't know anybody. And
right.
The first things you do is you go around and you don't say anything and you just eye gaze.
Mm-hmm.
And it's, I happen, for whatever reason, to not find it very threatening. I kind of find it fun. But
mm-hmm.
I can tell
mm-hmm.
that some people it's really, really scary because they feel really exposed.
Mm-hmm.
And they feel revealed. It's really threatening. So it's a powerful way to pursue intimacy, simply eye-gazing. Another way, as you know, is to simply hug another person, right?
Absolutely.
Go ahead.
You know, the hugging is important. At the end of my sessions, I will, with some of my couples or individuals, I can pick up, because I am intuitive, and I can pick up that they need some physical contact, and of course, that's a big no-no in my profession, except I'll say at the end of the session, when we're standing by the door, would you like a hug? And they mm-hmm. most always say, I mean, 99%, oh, yes. So,
right.
And it's often a very good conclusion to the session.
It's very odd, isn't it, that the culture of therapy says that it's verboten to do hugging. I kind of get it, but it's kind of reflects the whole paranoia in our culture about physical intimacy, don't you think?
Yeah, it does. But of course, well, let's not get off into that. So
okay.
just to go back a little bit to the positivity, I'm aware of a wonderful study that has been 80 years called the Longevity Project. And in 1921, Stanford University psychologist Lewis Terman recruited 1,500 elementary school students. And he began an academic inquiry that would last, as I said, 80 years. And then he followed his subjects into adulthood. And then he died in 1956. And then two other psychologists picked it up at Stanford. And so the data, this is very rich data, 80 years. So factors that seem to contribute to lengthy life spans. And the one I liked the best was to have more fun in bed. So, yeah. So almost 60 years before Sex and the City, Terman got these women to talk about their sexual satisfaction, to talk about the average amount of time they spent being intimate with their husbands, to talk about the frequency of their orgasms. And the record showed from this study that the women who most often reached climax most often lived longer. Isn't that a wonderful bit of news?
It's. Excuse me, I must sign off and go have sex.
Oh, that's right.
Just simply because I want to live longer. So was it also true for guys, or is it just women who had this?
Oh, no, there's plenty of evidence that guys who, lots of studies have shown that men who have intercourse, the one 10-year study showed that men who had intercourse twice a week lived three times longer than men who had it twice a month.
Wow,
and,
that's really
yeah. And this was a study in Wales, and so I thought it gave new meaning to a guy who might say to his wife, "Honey, I'm just going to die if we don't have sex."
Right. So, you didn't mean it literally, right?
But sex is so healthy. It's just so healthy for us.
And I would think that touching is also, I don't know if they'd examine touching, but I would bet you that touching has a similar effect, just physical connection.
Absolutely, and get the oxytocin going. And you know that in the post-coital phase of orgasms and all of that, you've got a lot of oxytocin circulating and endorphins and so on. So that's just so healthy and makes you feel so good. And I like what Reed says in your chapter on energy sex. Every time you do energy sex, you're taking a vacation from fight and flight. Not only is it good for your blood pressure and health, it's like lying on a Hawaiian beach with orgasms. I really appreciated that.
Well, yeah, I mean, what one of the keys to getting skilled at energy sex, according to Reed, is to invoke the parasympathetic nervous system. And that's the part of the nervous system that is engaged when we're relaxed and chilling out. The sympathetic nervous system is what we engage when we go into fight or flight. You know, I have to run, I have to fight, I have to freeze when I'm being stressed out. So the more, people talk about stress as a killer. So the more you relax, the more you become present, the more you just sink into that parasympathetic state of relaxation, the more you'll be able to connect to your energy, the more magical your sex can become, and the healthier it is for you, too.
So that's why I share with a lot of the couples I see that give an erotic massage before you have sex, and you're going to be more relaxed and perhaps have better sex.
Absolutely. And, I've sort of been dancing around this for a couple minutes now, but there's a therapist, as you know, named David Snarch, and I believe he's the guy who coined the term hugging till relaxed.
That's right.
Just like an erotic massage can do it, but there's so much, relationships are so complicated that, and there's so often not enough just touch in relationships.
Yep.
That hugging to relax is just you hold each other until you begin to let go of some of your fight or flight stuff. You shift from sympathetic to parasympathetic. And it's a great strategy, too. So if you're having relationship challenges but want to have sex, I would recommend hugging to relax, followed by an erotic massage, followed by lots of foreplay, followed by great sex.
Absolutely.
There we go.
The other part about hugging till relaxed, and I do bibliotherapy. I give my clients articles to read, and I've done this for many years, and also exercises to do. And I've got hugging till relaxed all printed out, and of course, a part of hugging till relaxed is that many people don't know how to self-soothe. And when you can calm yourself down, calm yourself way, way down, you're going to be able to deal with these stressors better. And so hugging till relaxed is diagnostic in that the person, you aim for like 4 minutes, and the person that pulls away first often has some more trouble with self-soothing.
Oh, that's so interesting. Yeah, 4 minutes, huh?
And just one more thing about this. So there's a guy named Dr. Sapolsky. I guess it's Robert. He's at Stanford. He still is, but 20 years ago I heard him give a lecture, and he'd written a book called Why Zebras Don't Get Ulcers, and he talked about the fight or flight mechanism and how if we have chronic stress, and many people do, where there's no chance for fight or flight, that it is, our bodies have way too much adrenaline and cortisol, and that affects every part of our body.
Right.
And so we're much more likely to die sooner and not have good quality of life. Because the zebras, if they're being chased by a lion, They'll usually do the flight business. They won't try to fight. But
right. Not for long, anyway.
Yeah, not for long.
Right.
But
losing strategy if you're a zebra.
That's right. That's right. So I really liked what the two of you said in this chapter, that when you resonance play, talking about that, it's a training ground for great habits and can make you more self-confident and open-minded. Energy sex has made, I guess he's talking about himself, Reed, me happier, a better person, and it can do the same for you. And yeah, I believe that's absolutely true.
And I think one of the great things about it is it kind of, in addition to being fun and a great way to connect with another person and a very safe way to connect sexually, mm-hmm. if you're concerned about condoms and safer sex and all that stuff, mm-hmm. energy sex, you don't have to get undressed. Reed talks about having energy sex via Skype, right? You can have totally safe sex that's orgasmic in a very real sense. So it has all kinds of benefits. And one of the benefits is we get more accepting of the fact that life can have this sort of magical quality. You know, it's the whole thing, it's kind of bizarre. I mean, is this going on? It just doesn't make sense. And yet it's happening anyway. And there's something really powerful in dealing with that paradox, like this can't be real and it is real. And you just sort of let go of that. It's almost Zen in that way. You go, okay, things are bigger and deeper and more complex and richer, and I guess I'll stop worrying about it and just let it happen, right?
Let it happen. Surrender. Just be in the moment. I work with a lot of women who have trouble reaching orgasm, and that's the main message. Let go. Be present. Surrender. Okay. And, of course, that's scary for some people, and sometimes they need a little work about it, therapy.
Absolutely. Life is, you know, we all have our challenges, and we all have our stories, and we all have our fears of failure and success, right? So this is really complicated stuff, but mm-hmm. I think the potential, the upside is just almost literally unbelievable. I'll tell you a quick story.
Please.
So Reed was doing a workshop with my partner, my life partner, Sherry Winston.
Yes.
And I don't know if I've told you this story, but Reed is really skilled at energy sex, and so is my partner, Sherry.
Right.
I'm sitting in the audience, and, you know, Sherry's my life partner. Reed is on the stage with her, and he takes his index fingers, puts them in Sherry's ears, and this is a quote from mm-hmm. he tunes into her frequency and starts sending energy through his fingers into her ears, and Sherry starts having energy orgasms. It was like,
I love it.
I'm sitting in the audience and going, I don't know whether to admire Reed or want to kill the guy.
I suspect you admired him.
I admired
him. And anyway,
him,
Sherry was having
seriously.
Fun, right?
She was having a great time, and I'm not serious, obviously, about wanting to kill him.
Right.
But I had sort of this script of, aren't I supposed to be jealous or something about this at this point? Anyway, it was really something to see. And this is something that we're all capable of, really. It's a matter of really learning to tune in to energy and be able to transmit it. Reed talks about, in his chapter about your lover as a wine glass. And what he says is,
how
you can make a wine glass sing, and there's a kind of focus or concentration that's required.
Yes.
And it's kind of, you can't really put it into words, but there's something about pressure, texture, moisture, timing, and you can find that place where you can get the wine glass to sing.
Mm.
That's the process for doing energy sex. You go into a space where you're just dealing with stuff that you can't put into words, and there's not a paint-by-number strategy, but you learn how to do it just by a certain kind of attention and focus. That's what he was doing when he was taking his fingers and tuning into Sherry's energy field so he could transmit energy at the level that would get her fired up. So there's kind of
it's
a real
talent. It's a skill.
Yep.
It really is. And
yep.
I'm thinking, just to go back to David Snarch, I mean, he says that most people won't have the best sex of their lives until they're in their 50s and 60s and beyond.
Well, because
we're not differentiated enough.
Yeah, I think that's great. I think it's true. I am a man of a certain age, and I've had the best sex of my life in the last 10 years, no question about it.
Yeah, and me too. I'm a woman of a certain age, And right. So here's a rather philosophical question. I ask this occasionally to my clients, but I think it fits in here well. And Carl, what advice would you give to your younger self about sexuality?
Oh, my word.
That's a profound question.
Can I just free associate? Is that fair?
Of course, you can do whatever you want.
Stop trying so hard.
Okay, love it. Yep.
Stop trying to pretend that you know everything. Shut up and ask questions.
Okay.
Practice humility. Want me to keep going?
Yeah, I'm making some notes here because I want to put this in my review of So stop thinking so hard. Shut up and listen ask questions.
Practice humility.
Act with humility.
Understand that what you're really trying to do is not get points as a stud, but connection as a lover.
Connection as a lover. Yeah, a lot of young men don't get that at all.
Right. Have fun, just the way we were talking about.
Absolutely, have fun.
And laugh a lot.
Laugh. Yep.
Yeah, all the stuff we've been talking about.
All the stuff.
I mean, I don't think I was atypical in my upbringing, but it was all I was in I'm trying out for the varsity, and I hope I get a passing grade kind of mindset for many years.
Yeah.
I mean, it's sort of sad.
And we all have memories of the kind of awkwardness. We didn't really know what we were doing.
That hardly begins to describe it.
I know, awkwardness.
Oh, Lord.
And, you know, so sexual confidence and self-confidence are intertwined in some pretty interesting ways. A very small study showed that women who had learned to have predictable and maybe even multiple orgasms, if they were in work that they didn't like, they changed jobs. And if they were in work they did like, with this added sexual confidence, right, having orgasms, they advanced. So it's to me, it's fascinating that sexual confidence can kind of migrate over to self-confidence. But it seems to me it's a positive feedback loop. And
it's really interesting that you say that. I'd also suggest that maybe it's because they are they're not squashing themselves emotionally or psychologically, so they can show up with more light, more life, more gusto, and that has positive effects. So they're creating positive reinforcement systems, which kind of brings us back to positivity. They feel good about themselves, and they bring that feeling good about themselves into the world, and that helps others feel in their presence feel good about themselves, and all of a sudden we've got all this good stuff going on.
Well, perfect. You are an amazing, brilliant guest because you kind of looped us back to what we started with, positivity. You know, if I look back to my earlier self, what advice would I give to my younger self? It would have been, even though I was a risk taker in general, for instance, I went around the world alone when I was only 24 for several months, and that back then that was a big. Most women my age, who were blonde, blue-eyed women, wouldn't travel alone, you know.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So I had a lot of general confidence, but I didn't have very much sexual confidence, and I also was situationally orgasmic. So I think I would have. Of course, I've come a long way. Thank you very much. I'm so delighted I have, but
you've come a long way is exactly
I've
the right
come thing. A long way, baby.
There you go.
And Brian is delighted, of course. And but when we're in our younger selves, we often don't have the confidence to take a risk, to try something new, I'm working with, I just saw them yesterday, they're a young couple, and they, because of their religion, they, when they got married at 23, they were both 23, neither one of them had intercourse. They were virgins. And so when they came to me, she didn't even know. She also hadn't masturbated. She didn't even know if she could have an orgasm. Well, we worked, and I also gave her Betty Dodson's, loaned her mm-hmm. Betty Dodson's orgasmic, and this is a great thing, the group. And this young woman really took notes. And now, and it's unusual for somebody so young, and I've been seeing them for a year and a half. I mean, we only meet maybe once a month now, but she's having incredible orgasms, and he knows what to do. He's skilled. He stimulates her clitoris. He puts his fingers in her vagina. He knows what to do. A lot of young men don't have a clue, but I've loaned them videos to watch other than Betty Dodson, and we can learn visually, right? And so here's a couple that, you know, they have their struggles in their early marriage, but not now with sex. They're having a great time. And boy, talk about satisfaction in my work.
Really, that's job satisfaction.
It really
yeah,
is.
Right.
Yeah.
And
yeah,
it's probably because you have so many orgasms in your private life that you're so good at your work professionally.
Absolutely, you nailed it. Yeah,
I practice
what I preach, and I've often said to Brian, because we've been together now 4.5 years and engaged for almost a year, and yeah, I'm a much better sex therapist now because I'm having just the time of my life personally. So, I'm a sexual cheerleader. And my clients, most of them know I practice what I preach, and so I'm more authentic. As Sherry is in her work, and as you are in your work, because you're doing it.
Well, I think if you're going to pretend or presume to be a guide or a mentor to others, you better be showing up and actually doing what you're talking about, because otherwise it won't wash, you know?
It won't. Nope.
Not as well, anyway.
Carl, you are an absolute delight. And I want to have you and Sherry back again soon. I hope you'll agree to that. You've been a very accommodating guest, I must say. And I was thinking that you're in your chapter with Reed as a way to conclude this show. You write, here's another side benefit of energy sex. It's training ground for great habits and can make you more self-confident and open-minded. Energy sex has made me happier, better person, and it can do the same for you. Amen.
Amen is right. And thank you, Diana. We'd love to be on, and you're fabulous.
You're fabulous, too. Thank you, Carl. And next week, everybody, I have Michael and Barbara Jonas. They're the creators of many wonderful relationship and sex games. Time for Two, TWO, is their website. So we'll be back next week. Please tune in. Thanks, everybody. So glad to be back. Bye-bye.